So okay, if you think this this question is crazy, you should have a look at the answer, which is even crazier. The answer is yes, and it's trying to minimize its beta free energy. Okay, yes, on some short scale of time, meaning that what I was told is that third generation UMTS will be based on a standard that is very similar to what I will describe. So these are some of the person I've collaborated with on this topic. So this is the plan of my talk. I'll give an introduction on Shannon theory, which is the basic mathematical theory which is behind any communication process. Then I will give an introduction to a particular coding scheme, a particular class of coding schemes, which are called low-density parity check codes. Then I will give an introduction to iterative decoding, which is the algorithm which is used for decoding these codes. Then I will come to physics and see, after this three introduction, you should be convinced that my question and my title was not completely crazy. And so we can talk about physics of these systems, and so what physics can bring to coding theory. And then I'll draw some sketchy conclusion about what physics can learn from all this. So this is what Shannon theory is about. You have Bob, who communicates with Alice, and which has nice red hair. And so he wants to communicate some piece of information to Alice. And in order to communicate information, he used some communication channel. But unhappily, the communication channel is noisy. So this phone line is noisy, and the message is received by Alice is quite different from the original one. And so this causes some disappointment. And this is how, in 48, Shannon came out with this formalization of this situation. This mathematical formalization, which is, I mean, the most important piece of his theory. So you have a source, and the source of information, in this case Bob, is something which produces a string of character according to some stochastic process. Okay. So in this case, we think of L characters, which can be, for instance, letters of the English alphabet. These characters are fed into a communication channel, and the communication channel is again described by some stochastic model. And in this case, for instance, we can assume that each letter at the output is is probabilistic and is given by this probability law, and it depends upon the input at the same time, I. And so you have some destination of the message, which received a corrupted message, which is stochastic, both because the input is stochastic and because the channel added some noise. So what are simple examples of noisy channels? Here I give two very simple examples. The first is the simplest. Hereafter I will consider only bits, so zeros or one. The simplest example is the binary symmetric channel. So you transmit zeros or one, so this is your input alphabet, and you receive zeros or one, and each bit can be flipped with probability p and is correctly received with probability 1 minus p. So p is denoted as the flip probability. The second example is the binary resource channel. The input can be either a 0 or a 1, and the output can be either a 0 or 1, or a special character which is which we interpret as an erasure. So these have been told that this is a model which is good for the internet, because in the internet you send packets of information and you can either receive them correctly or lose them, but if you receive them you are sure they are correct. So P in this case it is called the erasure probability. This model is nice because in many cases can be treated much more in detail than other general channels. And then you can add any complication you may think of, for instance, continuous signals or memory or whatever else. But here we will stick to simple models. So the idea of coding is the same of natural language, meaning you have to add redundancy to your message in order to be transmitted in a reliable way. So if you don't read just a letter of a word, you can guess what the word was. Okay, so the source produces still in a stochastic way some message. Then you feed it into an encoder, which produces a longer string, which will assume to be always a string of bits. This string is fed into the channel, which gives out an output. Then you have a decoder which guesses what the input was. Okay, and the hope is that this message, after all this process, coincides with the original one. Okay, and the important parameter here is the rate, which quantifies the amount of redundancy in your encoding procedure. This is the ratio of the length of the input message, the original message, to the length of the encoded message. And in order for redundancy to be added, it must be smaller than one.
Yeah. Suppose I say, my encoder means that I repeat my message 10 times. So we are using 10 times. Why is encoding better than that?
This is a good point. And it's the content of my first example. This is the simplest coding scheme you can think of. You have a source which produces bits. You encode it simply by repeating 3 times each bit. So I choose 3 times because I had not enough spaces for repeating it 10 times. And I choose 3 because it's odd. Okay, then you fed it into a binary symmetric channel. This channel flips a certain fraction of the original bits, for instance, the third, this one, and so on. So you have still a message of length 3L. And what is a reasonable decoder? Well, you pick 3 bits which correspond to any original bit, and you use a majority rule. So 0, 0, 1, say 0, 1, 1, 1, 1. But here, 0, 1, 1, 1, you get an error. OK. So you got a coding scheme with the rate 1/3, which seems to work reasonably well because, you are able to correct some errors. OK, why should one hope to do better than this? This is Jorgek's question. The answer is this amazing theorem by Shannon. So, if you look at the performances of the repetition code, you easily understand that the bit error rate, this is the flip probability of the channel, the bit error rate is non-zero at any value of the bit probability, the flip probability. In particular, this goes like p square a small p, because in order to make an error in the decoder, you need to have 2 flips in the channel. Okay, and the 3 comes from combinatorics. In 48, Shannon said you can communicate error-free below capacity. This means that there exists a number p Shannon, which is a function of the rate, such that there exists a code which allows to communicate error-free up to the speech Shannon. And there is also a converse of this theorem that says that you cannot do better than that. There is the bit error rate is bounded away from zero above P Shannon. Okay, and this is quite amazing because I mean you put something, you give your message to a channel which has noise, and in the end of the day you are able to reconstruct it exactly. Okay. The crucial point is that of course you are able to do this only if you consider very long messages. So what you do is you pack up your you chop your message in longer pieces, and each piece you encode, and then you transmit it, you decode, and you glue again the pieces. And this can easily understood from a statistical physics point of view. Namely, here you have a phase transition, and this phase transition can occur only in thermodynamic limit. Okay, but nevertheless, this happens at finite. At a finite rate. So with the repetition code to achieve zero error probability, I have to get to zero rate, namely repeat my message n times, t times with t large. In this case, I do it at finite rate. Okay, and this is a function which is easy to compute, but not important. Moreover, Shannon proved this statement, which is a very nice statement, that is almost any code will achieve Shannon bound. Why? This is built in the proof that Shannon gave of his theorem. Namely, he proved it by taking a random code, okay, which is much very similar to the way of thinking of statistical physics. He said, rather than constructing a very good code and working under that, I will build a completely random code, and in the end of the day, I will prove that this is you cannot do better than taking a random code. So the funny thing is that after this that there were 50 years of coding theory, and the people struggled for finding these good codes. I mean, Shannon said almost all codes are good, but no, except the one people knew. I mean, okay, why is that? I mean, it's not that that fool, because they are not stupid guys. The point is that decoding is, in general, an NP-complete problem. So if you pick up a random code as Shannon did, you cannot decode it in polynomial time. And this was proved, this was known since the beginning, but was proved only in the 70s by these guys, because it was proved just after Cook theorem. No, it's not obvious. It's not obvious. I mean, it's obvious for Shannon code, because Shannon code consists in taking you have. So you can think of a code as a collection. You have the Hamming space, namely the space of sequences of zeros and one. And you can think of a code as a collection of points of 2 to the n r points in this space. So what is the decoding problem? Is that one of these problems is used for communicating information, and a different point is received because there is some noise. So decoding is finding the nearest among all the green points to this blue one. But you see that if these green points are totally decorrelated, you are no hint about how to find them. So the only way to find them is just to go through all of them, or to construct concentric spheres around them. But both of this method is exponential.
From what I learned in this problem is that all NP-complete problems are, in a sense, can be mapped on each other.
Yeah.
Does it mean that almost any decoding can be mapped on numbers decomposition into problems?
Yeah, no, the number decomposition, the factorization is complete. Yeah, can be. It has been mapped. This works by mapping on two tree sat, so which is kind of a standard.
Another way of destroying the error-free region is the radius where your probability of finding a point is zero, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, well, you can think of this game of constructing a good code as a sphere packing game. So you want, I mean, you are able to decode correctly, surely, up to half of the distance between any two of these code words. Indeed, you can do better because, I mean, in high-dimensional space, things are a little bit strange. So you have to, for the Shannon code, you are able to decode up to the distance between two code words because all three angles are isosceles. Okay. So this is done. So. So this is the second part of my introduction, low-density parity check calls. Here there are a lot of people who worked on this type of calls. The person who invented this is Robert Gallagher, which was doing his PhD thesis at MIT in the 60s and invented this object for his PhD thesis, but essentially nobody cared about this thesis, and coding theory went on his path, constructing algebraic geometric codes and so on and so forth, until okay, these guys rediscovered in the 90s this work and told the other guys, okay, it's these codes do amazing things, and since then this has been, I mean, a revolution. Okay, there are many families of them, but I will describe just Gallagher codes. Okay, and the idea is that, okay, the encoder is a black box which maps sequences of length L onto sequences of length N. Let us take a linear map, modulo 2, where G is some large matrix of zeros or ones. So this defines what are called linear codes. So in a linear code, of course, code words form a linear space because they are the image of this operation, so they can be seen as the kernel of this other operation. So the idea of Gallagher was, okay, let us take this matrix H to be very large, of course, and a random matrix, and sparse. What does it mean, sparse? It means that here you have n order n squares element, and you want to have only order n ones. Okay. In particular, the simplest Gallagher construction is to take k ones per row and L ones per column, so you are fixed the weight of both columns and rows, and other than that you can take flat distribution over all this space of matrices. Once you have this, you invert it and you have a generating matrix which is dense, and you use it to encode your message. Okay, so this is how these codes work, and this is how they are decoded. Okay, let us go. You can represent the code as a graph, a bipartite graph. I draw a little square for each one of the row of the my parity matrix, that is each constraint. If you see this equation, I had some equation which is h x equals 0. This can be viewed as a set of linear equation, of course, x1 plus x3 plus x11 equals 0, and so on and so forth. So I draw a little square for each one of these equations and a little circle for each of the variables, and I trace a link between a square and a circle if that variables belong to that equation. For instance, here I have this parity check. These are called parity checks. This parity check tells me that x1 plus x2 plus x3 plus x5 must be equal to 0 modulo 2. And you have a bunch of these constraints on a very large number of variables. So they are parity check because they check the parities of the number of ones between this bit. Okay, I have not only this structure, but something which comes to me from the communication channel. So I receive some noisy version of the original bit, which is x1 out, x2 out, x3 out, so on and so forth, which tell me something about these bits here. I have to satisfy all these constraints. So I can rephrase this problem in this way. The probability distribution of x to be the output, to be the input of the channel, conditional to x output to be the channel output, has this form. Well, okay, these terms come from the output, so they are the probability of the x out to be the output conditional to this one to be the input. And then I have some indicator functions which force the sum of bits on the same equation to be equal to zero, as written here. So you begin to see that this can be seen, and then you have a normalization constant, of course. Now you can think of this as a system in which you have some random field on the bit, which comes from on the bit which comes from the channel output, and some interaction between bits which force enforce the parity check equation. And what is the decoding problem? The decoding problem is, okay, we want to compute the marginal probability of a single bit. Okay, we want to know whether the third bit is a zero, is most probably zero or one. So this amounts to taking this huge object, the probability distribution, sum over all of the other bits, okay, and derive some marginal. And okay, this is a perfectly well-defined problem, but as we know, it's a very difficult problem because it's the problem of classical statistical mechanics. And the point is that computationally you have an exponential number of summands here. Once you have done this summation, everything is trivial because you say, okay, the best guess I can give of the ith bit is the one which maximizes its marginal probability. Okay, and this strategy goes under the name of symbol map decoding, but okay, there are other strategies. This is somehow the simplest one. And it is the one which minimizes the bit error rate. So the point is, how do we do this summation? And here is where iterative decoding comes. So the idea is that, okay, here I redraw the tunnel graph, the graph of interactions between bits. Each circle is a bit, and each square tells me that the mod 2 sum of these bits around it must be equal to zero. And they have some output information. So locally, since I took this matrix to be random, it happens that this graph is a tree-like, namely at any fixed, this is, if I fix a radius around zero, in the large side, it's limited, the probability to have a cycle inside this radius goes to zero. And cycles are of order log n. Okay? So this is nice because computing marginals on trees is very easy.
Sorry, just to make sure I understand, I think until circles get spins, you're free to flip, and the square is important to be.
Yeah. you can think of the circles as spins, plus or minus one spins, and of this one, of this object, tells that the product of these four spins must be equal to plus one, okay, which is identical to the sum of the bits to bit zero. And of course, you can think, this is the slide, the number, I don't remember, but you can think of this as random fields on the spins. So the idea is of iterative decoding is, okay, let us cut off the tree as some large radius t, okay, from the root. When I've done this, okay, it's trivial to compute the idea is that everything below this distance is irrelevant to computing these marginals, because correlation are somehow short-ranged. And once you have done this, you know that the statistical mechanics on trees is very simple. Why? Because you can start by summing over the leaves and represent the result of the sum as an effective field on the new leaves. So I get a recursion which reduces the size of my trees at each step, and I finally end up with a single site with an effective field on it. Once I've done this, I can give my answers to what is the probability distribution of this single spins. So this is very simple. There is a more practical way of implementing it, rather than chopping your tree and begin this reduction procedure, that is this message passing. But okay, this is just a different scheduling. And the idea is that you have two types of messages from spins to, or from bits to check, and spins from check to bits. And each time round, you send either messages in this direction or messages in the other directions, and you iterate somehow. And what is the content of this message? More or less is, okay, I think I am a 1, or I think I am a 0, so given the information I received from all the other spins. And the content of this type of messages is, I think you are a 0, or I think you are a 1, given the information I received from all the other guys. Okay, and this is equivalent to this reduction procedure. And in general, these are real object, the U on or the V, which are just effective fields and are called the messages. And all these procedures is was invented once in the 60s by Gallagher himself, then it was reinvented in artificial intelligence by someone called Pearl, and he named it Bliff propagation. Then it was reinvented for some other codes, and then people discovered that they were doing just the same thing. Okay, so I told you that these messages are passed around on this graph. So how are they computed? The idea is that the nodes somehow perform some calculation. And so, for instance, a message from site I to site to check alpha at time t plus 1 is a function of all the messages coming from the other parity checks at time t. So it's a sum indeed, plus some function of the output that tells me, okay, the output is telling you something. So if all these guys tell him you should be a 0, and this guy tells him you should be really a 0, and this guy will tell him I'm definitely a 0. This is the rationale. And check nodes do a different computation. So they do this strange computation, compute the hyperbolic tangent of all the incoming messages, take the product, take the inverse hyperbolic tangent, and send it as a message. Again, the rationale is that if all this says, we are positive, the product will be positive, and he will tell him, you must be positive for the product to be positive, to be plus one. If just one of these is negative, the product will become negative, and this guy will tell him, you must be negative in such a way that, okay, the parity check is satisfied. And okay, if you have ever tried to do mean field calculation on spin models, you will realize that these are just the beta equation for a model with the multi-spin interaction and the random field H on a hypergraph. Okay, and so they can be seen. So these are they are also called the cavity equations in spin glass context. And this is why I told you that they can be seen, therefore, as the saddle point equation of some beta free energy. This is a fact which was discovered by Jonathan Yedidia, among the others, which is a physicist who passed to informatics. And people is very happy about this characterization. Coding people, so you can hear, you can listen to coding people talking of free energy. So, what are the performances of this coding? More or less, the amazing thing is that they have a phase transition at some point, a phase transition which, with this approximate algorithm, because I gave you an algorithm, but somehow I neglect cycles, so. It's of course an approximate algorithm. Nevertheless, this algorithm managed to provide zero error probability as up to some critical noise. Then you have a finite error probability, and people were able to get very close to Shannon bound with this scheme, with this approximate decoding. For instance, on the binary resource channel, they were able to get all the way to Shannon capacity, and this was kind of an historic result. And on the Gaussian channel, which is more general, these guys were able to get to 0.004 decibel out of. No.
Is it together taking into consideration the
approximate? Yeah. The idea is that this is indeed okay. This is exactly what you were said. This is the decoding with this iterative algorithm suboptimal. So ideally, you may think that if you were able to actually compute the big sum, you could get somehow between these two, but. Okay, practically you can achieve this result, and moreover, people know how to compute this threshold, so they do all sort of clever optimization on their code to push this as close as possible to. Yeah.
So, and this, you don't have to say which is the instance, or?
This is the average, so you fix the ensemble, you consider always an ensemble of codes which are clever enough, then you have a channel, a model for your channel, and you take the typical output given the average output given your probabilistic model for the channel, and you know that with probability 1 you will get this curve, with probability 1 in the large size limit. Okay, and this is one interesting point about this coding theory problem is that there are computational problems where average typical case is the relevant issue, because there are two sources of disorder: the design of the code, which you control, and the channel, which is random. So they are not, I mean, they are not worst case problem; they are average case problem. So. Given these results, there are some interesting theoretical questions. For instance, does this algorithm compute the correct marginals? Okay, of course, this is an approximate algorithm and could be wrong in some cases. And if we use the exact algorithm, map decoding, that is making the big exponential sum. Would we gain anything with respect to this? And again, even more practical, there exists any low complexity decoder which can do better than this? So these are the kind of questions that in which some statistical physics idea can be useful. So as Annetto already remarked, this is indeed, you can think of it as a spin model. So you have these big probability distributions, these maps onto random fields, and these maps onto K-spin ferromagnetic interactions. You put a beta here, an inverse temperature, because you want this parity check to be satisfied exactly. So eventually I will take a large beta limit. And on the other hand, these are finite, and their distribution is given from the channel. And the correspondence between spin and bit is, of course, this one. So we have two main ingredients to the physics of this type of models. One comes from this interaction, so forget about the random fields. One can show that despite the fact that this ferromagnetic, and so it has an order at the ground state, which is somehow the crystalline ground state, it has all kinds of self-induced disorder and frustration, so it has a glassy behavior if you don't know that it has a crystalline state. So, for instance, if you start simulating it with a Monte Carlo from a random configuration, you will never distinguish it from its version with the random couplings. Okay. The other interesting fact is that the other important point is these random magnetic fields. How should we think of it? It happens that at low noise, the H are always positive, but at low noise they are always random. But at low noise they are mostly positive and large, so they point towards the crystalline ground state. Okay, here I make the assumption that the transmitted message was all zero, for instance, which means or plus one in this language, which is, since everything is symmetric, I can do this assumption. So at low noise, the magnetic fields are positive and biased, and high noise, they are both positive and negative and unbiased, and less biased. Okay. Yeah, the idea is that, okay, many people studied these kind of models. The idea is that, okay, you can define the disorder models putting here some j's which are random and plus or minus one. Okay, and that's not what's done. Then you run, for instance, two Monte Carlo simulations of the two models, starting from random initial condition, unbiased initial condition, and what you find is that the behavior is exactly the same. Why? Because one can think of it as, because I mean, this model has some all plus one states, which is ordered and are frustrated, which is in some tiny piece of the phase space, and if you run your simulation, you never will see it. No. For finite, just for K. This is there are two important things. It is a mean field, first of all, and that is any k-pole of spin can, is equally probable to interact. And second, you must have k greater or equal than 3. As soon as you do, you see, if you turn a spin, you get an antiferromagnetic interaction between the two. So if you start from a random object, all these the random spins don't prevent you from seeing the ground state. In analytic terms, what happens is that if you solve the model by replicas, you see, or by whatever, you see that it has a spin-glass solution which is exactly the same as the solution for the disordered model. So it's somehow what one the same as what one think of of glasses that they have no explicit quenched disorder. So I will give you the end-waving picture of the physics of this model, but everything can be computed. And okay, I will show later. So the idea is that without external field, as I told you, you have a very, very complex landscape of the exchange energy with many metastable states and some very stable states, some ground states which have zero energy. And these are the codewords, the 2 to the n r codewords, that is the solutions of this linear problem. Okay. And I want them to be there for communicating. So this is the transmitted codeword, okay, which is the crystalline ground state. But I have plenty of them because I want to use this system for communicating. And what happens with the external field? The idea is that, as I told you, the external field is positive and large at low noise, so it points towards the crystalline ground state, and somehow it forces you to work in this region. So at low noise, below some dynamical threshold, the external field selects a tiny region around your favorite ground state, so you will never see this complex structure. When you consider higher noise, what happens is that this region widens, and so you pick up some of these secondary metastable states. And if you were able to minimize exactly within this landscape, you could find the exact ground state, but you can, okay, but there are still these more complex feature, and at even higher noise, the external fields, the received message tells you very little about what the transmitted message was. And so you have an exponential number of these ground states within this window, and you are beaten. You cannot decode even if you were able to minimize this function exactly. Yeah, it's a bit like that, but here you want to, you want to construct an exact, exactly the ground state. In that case, you are, a finite overlap is enough, and then here, in that case, you are more interested in a large number of being able to storing many patterns. In this case, you want. The important feature is you want to have a single pattern somehow which comes out of your things, and then it's somehow similar. The idea is that you want to construct. You can think of a code as a physicist. The physicist code is just a physical system which has many ground states, and you have some parameter which can be used to select one ground state with respect to the others. Then you send this physical system to your friend, and the game is that your friend has to go down in energy. Yeah, exactly. These minima are exactly the code words, and the magnetic fields select one of the code words. So the funny thing is that this seems to be the idea of a physicist, but it's not. These were invented before. So that was the hand waving picture. You can actually calculate everything because the model is mean field. So for instance, you can take your Hamiltonian, use replicas, then one replica symmetric breaking, which involves some functional order parameter. Then you get the replicated free energy, and using an idea of Remy-Monasson, this gives you the logarithm of the number of metastable states, which is called the complexity. But of course, I think there is a nicer way of seeing, of looking at this calculation, which is easier to explain to people outside physics. And the idea is, we have this algorithm, and we hope that this algorithm has a unique fixed point. Let us count the number of fixed points of this algorithm. Okay, so for instance, here I have my message that comes in and my message that comes out. Let us say that this n I alpha is the number of fixed points of the algorithm such that the message sent passed from I to alpha is a u, and which have free energy f, beta free energy f. This is an integral over all fixed points, so I have to sum over all fixed points which have messages v beta on these branches, on these incoming branches. I have to enforce the fixed point condition, that is that this outgoing message is the correct one once you have the incoming messages, and then you have to reweight this with the correct shift in free energy. And this is strange from this point of view, but it's crucial for giving something non-trivial, because important fixed points are the one with the low free energy, so they are exponentially rare. So you write this plus a similar equation for the other type of nodes, and what you get in the end is that two things may happen. Even this n concentrate on a single value of the messages, this means that you have a single fixed point of your equation, or this n broaden, and this means that you have a large number of fixed points. So these points in the direction that, there is something in this statistical mechanics computation which is relevant for the behaving of the algorithm. So what happens if I plot the complexity? This is above, below a very low noise you have no complexity at all, so no metastable states. Between these two intermediate critical noise, PD and PC, I get some finite complexity at finite energy and no complexity at zero energy. Above PC, this curve touches zero, and you have some complexity at zero energy, meaning that you got in your window the zero energy states, that is other code words. So here, maximum likelihood, the optimal decoder would be able to jump and find the correct ground state, which lies somewhere here, but here even the perfect decoder cannot. So, and this is therefore the phase diagram, more or less. So you have these two noises. Here Shannon. Here what you can do by map decoding. Here what you can do by belief propagation decoding. And this coincides with the replica symmetry breaking phase transition point. And so you can think, we will see. And here are the points where suboptimal linear time suboptimal algorithms fails. So you have some kind of big desert between these two noises. So what is the idea of decoding? You can think, once you have done this calculation, you can think, if I were a physicist, how would I decode these objects? Let us run simulated annealing. And you are given the output message, you constructed the Hamiltonian, and you try to minimize it by simulated annealing. That is, more or less this. So you fix a beta, you run your Monte Carlo, etc., etc. And of course, two things happen. At very low noise, this is the energy as a function of time blob, you find your ground state. At higher noise, somehow you get stuck at some finite energy, and you can compute this finite energy. And you get something like this. Okay, so this noise, this is funny because you begin from an information theory algorithm, which is very strange, is a message passing algorithm. Then you invented your physicist algorithm, which is completely crazy from the point of view of communication theory. Both are linear time algorithms, and both fail at exactly the same point. And this is an hint telling you that there's something in the problem that is becoming difficult, not something in the algorithm which works. It's somehow a universal phenomenon. So this is my conclusion. What we can learn, what I've learned from this story. The first thing is that taking this point of view of working on a simple sample, on a single sample, that is, you are given your code, you are given in the information theory context, you are given your received message, and your game is to decode it by some clever way that is a mean field calculation in some sense. So you can think of mean field calculation on single objects. And the second thing is exactly that, that is, you can think of any physical calculation in an algorithmic way. And this whole belief propagation business is nothing but a mean field calculation, but plus the idea that it is an algorithm, not an approximation to something. So this, I think, it's interesting. And then analyze it. So usually in a mean field calculation, you have a part of it which is an algorithm, and a part of it which is the analysis of the algorithm, and the physicist put all together, but they are distinct objects, and sometimes it's worth thinking of them as distinct. That's all.
Your talk reminded me of this satisfiability problem that Mark Mazzara,
yeah,
and Giorgio Parisi talked about, in particular on this belief propagation business.
Yeah.
Is there a connection, and if so, can you clarify for us?
Yeah, the connection is that, okay, the belief propagation, is exactly the same thing for different model, and is doing, from a physics point of view, the replica symmetric approximation, or the cavity method at replica symmetric level, and that, as I told you, was invented once in the 60s by Gallagher, who called that some product algorithm, then what was invented by this Pearl and was called the belief propagation, and then of course was invented in physics community as mean field approximation or whatever. And actually you can think of dealing with more different problems other than coding problems with the same ideas. And if the problem has some relevant replica symmetry breaking structure, you can think of going beyond that. So what Mark and Giorgio did is using the one-step approximation as an algorithm, exactly. And this in some problems can be useful, because if you have the ground state which breaks a replica symmetry, you can argue that for finding it, you have to use the correct mean field approximation. And indeed, for a random case at knowing of belief propagation, they called their algorithm service propagation, because what you did in that case is exactly, if you want, counting it's more or less mutatis mutandis. What they did there is just keeping track of this distribution of messages, which they called the surveys, and And so in some cases, knowing of physics, knowing physics helps, because in this case, I don't think the same type of idea helps, but. Because I mean, in this case, you see, you have this structure of a band of glassy states, and then you have a ferromagnetic phase which is completely disconnected from them. So you can hope using one step RSB to find the high energy states, but not the crystalline. On the other hand, in KSAT, you have a band of glassy states which goes all the way to zero, and you have an extensive entropy, and you want to find the zero energy states.
What kind of one of the dimensional
code? What kind? Yes, what kind of code is what I've read? It's called a turbo code, which is similar to this, but you can think of it as two Ising models plus some mean field structure between them. And what you do is that you use for decoding, you use transfer matrix for one model, then you send the messages from the first one-dimensional model to the second, then you do transfer matrix, you send messages, transfer matrix, you send messages, and so on. So I don't remember the exact one-dimensional models. These are one-dimensional models with multi-spin interactions and something a bit. But I mean, the record to date is of this Gallagher code with some fancy distribution of these degrees. But there are a lot of practical issues. And
are people now using the low-density parity check code in preference to the turbo code? I mean, when Nicholas gives a talk, he always talks about the millions of dollars that were saved by going to turbo code. So has this one then overtaken it? Practically.
Practically, I mean, Nicolas surely knows more about these practical million-dollar details. But I mean, what I've read is this story of the third generation of UMTS. This I'm sure of. And okay, probably I've heard also other things. And I know a couple of startups who build this object in chips or whatever, and so you should ask them. We should ask them. Or buy shares.
Okay.